Hello and welcome to Unmuted Unmastered. I'm Will and this is the breeziest music podcast on the internet. Today I'm joined by James.
Hello.
And Elle.
Hiya.
In this episode, we're going to be reviewing the new album from Gulfer. We've got the upcoming releases you need to know about, but first, the news. James, what have you got for us this week?
I have two news articles this week, mainly because the first one is something we've already talked about recently. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, and that is the Apple finder situation. So the EU have come out and they've told everyone that they're fining Apple $1.8 billion for breaking EU law over music streaming. So 2 weeks ago, I reported, well, I guess I didn't report, but the Financial Times reported that they heard that would be a 500 million euro fine. And that's kind of what it probably would have been. But yeah, the EU in this circumstance have increased it to 1.8 billion. So I'm going to butcher her name, so sorry to her. But Margrethe Vestager, the competition chief of the EU, said the tech giant had broken EU antitrust rules for a decade by restricting developers from informing consumers about alternative, cheaper music services available outside of the Apple ecosystem. So yeah, that's the stuff about how Apple was basically blocking app developers from telling where users can get things cheaper. The commission said it had gone beyond its standard procedure in terms of finding, to provide a deterrent, not just for Apple, but for companies, other companies of a similar size, so things like Spotify, Tidal, whatever, and with similar resources. And yeah, she said that they've come to this figure because it's about 0.5% of Apple's worldwide turnover, and they have also considered that Apple submitted incorrect information, which, if that's true, that's wild. Yeah, I would definitely put the price up if that was the case. Like I mentioned 2 weeks ago, this is going to be appealed, and Apple is appealing it. It probably will get lower, but I thought it would be getting lower from 500 million, but it's going to be lower from 1.8 billion. So I don't know. Yeah, well, that's going to land probably around the 1 billion mark, but I'm not totally sure. Apple have come back and said the decision failed to uncover any credible evidence of consumer harm. Not true, but sure. Adding that Brussels reasoning ignores the realities of a market that is thriving, competitive, and growing fast. I think that's just Apple admitting it, really. They haven't really said anything.
I mean, they're basically saying, oh, these people are making enough money, we should be able to skim 30% off the top.
yeah, but that's all that's come out, really. Yeah, just an increase in price or confirmation that it is happening. But yeah, it's a massive amount now. There have been other situations, not with music streaming services elsewhere, not with music streaming, where the prices have been quite a bit higher, but this is a first in the music streaming space. So yeah, that's Apple being fined 1.8 billion.
0.5% of their worldwide turnover does seem like a reasonable chunk to fine them for this. So that seems positive that it's not, it is a bit more than just a slap on the wrist. Obviously, like you say, they might whittle that number down. I'm just enjoying imagining you with like a little flip notepad in Brussels making notes on what's happening in the EU to come and report on the podcast.
I wish I had the money to do that. That would be great. And you mentioned the fine, but also this is not the EU's doing, but the group's shares were down by 2.5% in morning trade. So yeah, it has a knock-on effect, and I'm sure that's probably the thing Apple is actually worried about.
I suppose when they're earning like that much money, it is the reputation that will have the bigger effect.
And they're not really and not like fully denying it either. So yeah.
Yeah, they're really not. They're not denying it at all, really.
I wanted to end on another positive this week, so I have another article. It's a quick one. UK independent record shops hit 10-year high. This is a kind of a lead up to the record store day, which is on the 20th of next month. So put that in your calendar if you don't have it there already. The Digital Entertainment and Retail Association, the ERA, has said that there are now 461 indie record shops in the UK, which is 122 more than 10 years ago. Seems like a positive thing. And then the demand for vinyl records has continued to increase for the 16th year in a row, and that's 6.5 million vinyl records sold. So that's the sales of £170 million. Yeah, just a fun one. Keep in mind that vinyl is growing, and it's here to stay.
Somewhat frustratingly from my point of view, because it means that if you go to an actual record store in person now, you find very few CDs. I mean, in the indie ones, it was kind of that way for a while. But if you go to Rough Trade in Bristol, they used to have, like, you know, maybe 50-50 records and CDs. Now there's, like, a tiny selection. Like, maybe some of the big new releases have a few out. And then they've got some, like, you know, selling them off old ones. But they, like, just don't stock other formats, really. It is just vinyl now, which I find disappointing.
Yeah, when you have an artist bring out a new album, the special hard copy release is generally vinyl. I'm sure there are many artists doing CDs as well, but like vinyl is sort of like the front page, sort of like the main star of the hard copy world.
Maybe you got to wait for CDs to become the new hipster trend, and then it'll be CD takeover. I don't know if we'll have like cassette takeover before that, though.
I mean, I don't think it's going to hit quite the same, but it does seem like there's something happening at the moment with portable cassette listening. Because I think, I mean, in the indie space, it's been big, but recently FIO, who are a Chinese company, but they've done a lot of, I think they still do, like, the little digital audio players. That was kind of their big start, but they do kind of headphones, and I think they've got, like, hi-fi stuff as well now. They've just announced a portable cassette player that looks a lot like the original Walkman. There are a few other companies. There was a Kickstarter one, I think it's called We Are Rewind. They've just released or just finished their Kickstarter or something for a Walkman-like device. It seems like there are a bunch of them hitting all at once, so there seems to be some interest in reviving the portable cassette experience. I don't know how much that's going to actually take off, but it does seem like that might start to happen now.
I mean, yeah, if you want something portable that's not digital, then I guess cassette is where you're going. Like CDs, you can have a portable CD player, but you run the risk of scratching it. It's a bit bigger than a cassette. All sorts of things.
You have to hold it the right way up all of the time. Yeah, they're not great.
I don't know. I do think we are like, I don't know if we'll get the same kind of theme that we have with vinyl, but I do think there is like a shift towards more cassette and that kind of portability. I think Olivia Rodrigo, and I don't know if this is going back to like her first album or her latest one, I can't remember, but I think she released like cassettes as part of her album launch. And I think there is that kind of like 90s nostalgia element that I think Gen Z really enjoy leaning into. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more cassettes, but I also don't think vinyl is going anywhere. I think that has kind of firmly slotted itself into I think partly the aesthetics of a lot of people, but also I think people do value the listening experience of vinyl and how that differs to other formats. So yeah, I don't see that going anywhere. I mean, overall, it is a positive that there are more indie record shops. Like, that's always a good thing. But I do take your point, Will, that it's a shame that they're not all CDs. I love CDs. I think also I prefer the like liner notes for CDs and things. I always find them really more like exciting. I remember when I'd get a CD growing up, like I'd always be so excited to read the liner notes and everything. Which I suppose you get with some vinyls, but I don't.
I mean, this is the big thing, right? With vinyl, you're getting like a bigger product. But I think, I mean, the initial idea of kind of releasing, kind of, I mean, particularly if you're a major, like an artist on a major label, and you're releasing your, you know, big selling album on vinyl, you want to make that an experience, and you should have lots of extra stuff. But I think the reality of most vinyl releases these days is, you get maybe a gatefold case for it, and you get the record, and that's it. Like, you're not getting a booklet or anything. So actually, yeah, you're right. It might be smaller, but I feel like the CD experience is kind of nicer. I mean, and then obviously there's the sonic differences, which I guess is subjective, but, you know, I prefer CDs personally.
And one more thing about CDs is the stackability. With vinyl, like, I think there's certain ways you have to store vinyl, but either way, if you have it stacked onto the top of each other or side by side, you can't tell, unless you have like labels sticking out, you can't tell which album is which. With CDs, you stack it and you just read it.
That's a very good point, actually. I remember growing up, my dad, like, all of my dad's CDs were in, like, this big chest of drawers. And you'd, like, open a drawer and you could see everything. Like, it was also all alphabetized, because I remember putting a CD back in the wrong place once. And it was, God, you just thought I'd, like, committed a crime.
Yeah, I really need a better storage solution for my CDs at the moment. At the moment, I've got them in, like, drawers of a Kallax. But the problem is the drawers aren't deep enough that you can put them, like, on their side, so you can actually read what you're getting. So it's all, it's not great, but
you need like an old school CD bookcase type thing. I remember you used to get them in like Argos and that. Like, I'm pretty sure me and my brother had the exact same one in our room.
Yeah, the problem is now you can either get like room sized ones that are enormous, which, I mean, would be useful for the size of my CD collection, but it's either that or you can't find them anywhere. There's no like kind of nice smallish ones that would slot in into a space a bit better. I guess because people aren't buying them, because people aren't buying CDs, which is the big issue.
Maybe you need to take up carpentry and make your own.
I feel like that's a multi-year journey to get good enough to make something that I'd actually want in my house, unfortunately.
I don't know, you might be a natural at it.
No, I've tried bits of woodwork. That's not going to be the case. Right, let's get on to our review for this week. We're looking at Third Wind by Gulfer. It's the fourth album from the Montreal-based band, released on the 28th of February 2024 on Top Shelf Records. It's 10 tracks long and 33 minutes. I've got a bit of an extended quote from the Bandcamp description, just because I think it's interesting to go through. So here's what it says. Quote, named for the band's third lease on life, Third Wind finds Gulfer at a unique moment in their 10 plus year career. When they started in 2011, Gulfer played scrappy, complex math rock influenced by the emo revival. But in 2024, they've emerged almost unrecognizable while still retaining the spirit of what made them all fall in love with Gulfer in the first place. And that's owed in large part to guitarist slash vocalist Joseph Terriolt. Originally a local fan and peer, Terriolt didn't join Gulfer until 2016, along with the band's longtime friend and now drummer, Julian Doust. Although founding member Vincent Ford and Terriolt have since traded off principal songwriting, Third Wind is the first release which Terriolt wrote the majority of the songs. While Ford and Gulfer's other founding member, bassist David Mitchell, no longer contribute the majority of the songwriting they once did. Morsels of their original sound remain. Signature wistful vocals and oblique, yet nimble guitars are still a fixture, as are thematic elements that touch on burnout, climate crisis, and losing touch with a difficult reality. But Third Wind's stylistic turns are emphasised by deeper texture and simpler songwriting, influenced by the re-emergence of 90s alternative and shoegaze. It's a long quote, but there's a lot to get into there. Let's start with our thoughts on the album. Elle, what did you think?
I really liked this one. I also really enjoyed actually hearing that kind of little, I guess, like insight into the album. I think there's a lot on the album that you can kind of dig into. From the kind of first listen, the opening track, I was immediately hooked. It opens on, I guess, more of a pop slant, and it was just immediately catchy, that first track, and I thought, oh yeah, I feel like I'm gonna really enjoy this album. And then I did, which is always nice, rather than being disappointed by the rest of an album. But this one is consistently strong, and there's a lot to pick out. I think there's, like I said, those kind of pop elements that are done really well, and then there's, you know, there's some kind of emo bits, there's a bit of punk, and there's a real indie vibe coming through the whole thing, which are all genres that I enjoy, so it was very much kind of leaning into what I like, so that definitely swayed it. But I think even if that's not your, you know, typical vibe, I think there's a lot to get out of the record. It's the production feels really like clear. I think especially if you listen to it with headphones, you can really pick up the kind of individual sounds. And it's the kind of album that I think would be really interesting to hear live as well. I think just kind of hearing the instruments live would really play into what they're doing and how they've mixed it. It's got great guitar moments, which just work so well. The lyrics, they're not like the most mind-blowing lyrics necessarily. But that being said, there are kind of lyrics that I picked out that I enjoyed, and I think the vocal delivery works really well with the tone of the album. It's got that kind of, I was going to say whiny, that sounds negative and that's not what I mean, but it's got almost that kind of like Gallagher nasal quality type thing, which just works really well with the genre. You know, when you've got that kind of emo punk, pop punk, it's that kind of voice, which, yeah, just works really well with the guitars and the whole production. I feel like I'm going to insult people if I try and describe it any more than that. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one. And I think as well, it's, like I said, the kind of whole album works really nicely. It's quite a short one. It's about half an hour. And it feels like they've really kind of captured what they wanted to set out in terms of the sound, with while still allowing each track to be its own thing. I almost wanted it to be longer because I was enjoying it, but I think it works so well as this kind of little bite-sized thing that I was like, oh no, I get why it's just that, but I also want the B-sides because I was enjoying it. So yeah, overall, really liked this one.
James, what did you think?
I don't think I have all that much to say about the album this week, but I think I should jump into the instrumentation of the album, actually. I think that's one of the main strong points. Especially those drums. Drum work is amazing. It's great. It's fun. It's vibrant. It sounds complicated. As well as the guitar as well. You really hear that math rock influence come in. I haven't listened to their previous stuff, so I don't know how different it is actually from the previous stuff. I mean, the quote says that their previous, when they emerged, it was math rock and emo, and I feel like that is what this is. So I don't know how much they changed, but whatever it is, it sounds good. I think the vocals were okay, like sonically they were pretty good, kind of what I expected. I wasn't so into the lyrics. I think there were like a lot of places where they just kind of fell short, and the lyrics felt like just like snippets from conversations and like sentences that weren't really complete. I didn't really make sense of them too much. I didn't really feel like there was too much of a deeper meaning to them, but it didn't really take me away from the from it sonically as a whole, really. I think I did prefer the album when I wasn't really listening too actively. When I had it on speakers, like in the background, that's kind of what I enjoyed the most, I think. Which I don't think it's a bad thing, but it's just, I think I would have preferred for it to shine a bit more when I was really listening into those lyrics and the Winch Cripper Hearts. But yeah, I enjoyed the sound, obviously, and that's why I enjoyed it in the background. So yeah, not to say I didn't like it, but it just wasn't really my favourite.
I'm approaching it from a slightly different perspective, I guess, as their album Dog Bless, which came out in 2018, is one of my favourite albums ever. So I'm coming at it as kind of a fan of the band, and I felt like after their self-titled, which was the follow-up to Dog Bless, that album felt like kind of a small building on what they'd done before, where they blended the electronic elements in a bit better, but the songs didn't always feel quite as strong. So I felt like after that they did need to make a shift, and they have done it here, where this album's definitely going in a more kind of pop direction and definitely leaning into those 90s rock sounds as well. I like the idea that they seem to be implementing the songs being a bit more like vignettes. So it feels like each song is kind of, oh, we're going to try this thing. And then the next song feels like, okay, we're going in a different direction now. I think, you know, with a runtime this short and with the songs being quite short, I quite like that. And they do still kind of work together. The thing that's made me more negative on it is I just feel the production, particularly on the first half, feels incredibly flat. It does get a bit better as the album goes on. I feel like it almost perfectly correlates with them going back to their older sound, where things start to sound better. But particularly in the first half, it just feels like a lot of the time the rhythm guitars and the cymbals from the drums are basically just completely melded together into this kind of this wall that's just kind of sitting there in the background, and it doesn't leave much room for dynamics or interest. And I think the drum playing is lovely, but there's not much room for you to really listen to it, is my take. And I felt like that kind of lets it down, because I think the songwriting is generally good. I think there are moments where on a few of the kind of different experiments, it doesn't pay off, like you were saying, James, where the lyrics can come off as a bit underdeveloped, or in places the vocals can come off as a bit annoying even. But I think overall they've done a good job of kind of changing the style a bit, but still doing something interesting. I mean, the final thing I'd mention on a broader scope is I just feel like the 90s influences are something different for the band, but I feel like it's very well trodden ground by other bands at this point of going back to the 90s and taking stuff from that. I feel like it's almost taking away from what makes Gulfer unique rather than adding to it. So it's quite a complicated one for me here, because on one hand, I really want to like the album, because I think a more pop version of Gulfer might get more people into the band. It could be good. I mean, there are emo bands that have gone pop and it's worked really well. I mean, look at Foxing's Draw Down the Moon. The album's amazing, and you know, they almost completely left turn from what they were doing before. This, I just feel like partly the production, but also I think some of the experiments don't work. It all just kind of adds up for me, and there's not enough of what I really love about Gulfer in it to make me really like behind the album. I feel like a lot of the time I'm like, oh, please just do a bit more of the kind of crazy guitar stuff, because I think there, when that comes in, it's amazing. So I think on its own, I'll try and wrap this up. It's long and meandering. On its own, it's a solid album. So if you're looking for like a kind of emo pop album and you've not heard Gulfer before, this is probably a decent one to check out, and it might get you more into their other stuff. But comparing it to their previous albums, I just feel a little bit let down from what I kind of want from the band. I feel like it's missing a lot of the, what I'd think of as like the soul of their previous stuff.
Feels like we've got like very different points this week. Coming to, you and I, Will, coming to a kind of a similar conclusion, but we got there in a different way. I guess it's just kind of our experiences with the band previously. I think the album stands on its own quite well. I think for me, a lot of it does sound similar. I don't get too much of the other influences. But I think halfway it does kind of change, and track 5, Too Slow, is quite interesting, because you suddenly get this like burst of energy. It's very energetic. I think that might just be because it's faster, just in general, in terms of its tempo. And it kind of makes it more exciting. It kind of woke me up halfway through the album. And halfway through that song, it suddenly changes and stops. And I'm like, okay, this is going somewhere. It's going somewhere different. This is doing something different. And it does this like more atmospheric thing, and it gets louder and louder. It does just suddenly die, which I thought was a bit strange. Maybe they could have developed that a bit more. But I kind of appreciated that. Yeah, this was a bit of a left turn. They did something a bit different. It kept me awake.
Yeah, Too Slow might be my favourite song on the album. And it feels like, particularly in that first half, I mean, it's literally like a minute that they play, the kind of first part of the song is. But that's what, I mean, the old Gulfer sounds like. I mean, this whole song feels like a throwback to Dog Bless. Like the first half being the emo side. And then on that album, they had these interludes of electronic music they put between the tracks. So it feels like the second half is both a kind of homage to that, but also it feels like they're developing on it, where I felt on the stuff on Dog Bless is the kind of maybe the one part of the album I think is maybe a bit weak, because they kind of reiterate the same kind of electronic sounds over and over again. Whereas here they're doing something interesting with like crazy drum patterns, and I think it works really well. So yeah, this is a song that I absolutely loved, and I think just everything of it, the pace of it, the drums feel like they have a lot of energy, I think, for the first time on the record, in terms of just the sound and the kind of weight they have to them. And just like small things, like there's just like this kind of whining guitar feedback that leads into, I guess, what you'd call the chorus at one point. It just has so much more clarity than a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah, I really liked Too Slow, and I think it's probably also my favourite from the album, for pretty much the reasons you've both said. And I think going back to what you said, Will, about it feeling like little vignettes, I think that's how I kind of look at the album as a whole, because it is so, it's short as an album. And the songs do feel like little vignettes of things. And I think maybe because of that, they don't necessarily always feel fully realised. But I don't mind that per se, because I think as a whole, it kind of feels like that works. And I think maybe that's why I don't mind so much that the lyrics aren't, you know, outstanding, because it does feel like little kind of snippets and snapshots of moments, which I enjoyed as kind of a different album experience. I mean, you know, I'm always going to love like a really strong lyric, and you know, my classic favourite of like a through line of an album where there's like a story and the whole album is, you know, this huge project. And I don't think that's what this one is, but I quite liked having something a bit different in that respect, where it feels like this album is more of this kind of collection of vignettes and moments rather than a huge storytelling project. And I think that also works well with, I think, kind of the tone and the vibe of the record generally. It feels, you know, bitty makes it sound like a bad thing. I don't quite know how to capture it, but it feels like that kind of works with what it is. Like, it's this kind of little bits of sound that craft themselves into this record. I think maybe I'm just approaching at it with this view rather than going at it and thinking, oh, this album is going to change my life and be, you know, this beautiful project. But I think also that's because I don't have the same background you do, Will, with the band. So I think I wasn't going in with any expectations. I don't know their previous work. So I think that would definitely colour my view otherwise. But I think because I was going into it very open, I then kind of allowed myself to just interpret it however I wanted to.
Two tracks I want to pick up on are towards the end, you get Prove and Vacant Spirit. I feel like those are the two for me that kind of hit the spot the best of doing, like, here's Golfer, but just a bit more pop. So on Prove, I think it you get kind of the softer vocals kind of layered over kind of a similar instrumental to maybe what they might have previously done. And I think that whereas in other places I maybe got a little bit annoyed by like a bit too much repetition in the lyrics or like particular vocal intonation just not sitting right with me, here I thought it kind of worked fine. I don't know that I loved the lyrical style change. I think maybe it was kind of whatever, maybe like not quite as good as the previous stuff, but it's something a bit different. Then on Vacant Spirit, I feel like they really hit the spot where it all kind of fits together. And if there's one track that's maybe like a vision of what they could do in the future or take away from this album as being where they'd go next, this might be it, because I feel like the chorus just works and it has a good sound to it. And there weren't any moments in the song that really stuck out as being frustrating or annoying me. And I think just generally it blends, you know, their sound with a more kind of bright tone, I guess, or a more kind of pop sensibility, or like they say in the Bandcamp description, simpler songwriting in a way that actually works well.
It proved had this like cheesy structure, like I guess it was just like a more poppy forward structure, which I just really enjoyed. It was kind of like straightforward, but it got you excited for the song. Yeah, just got you more into the song. It just made it more catchy, and made you want to move a bit, I guess. And I didn't mind that. I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, that really stood out to me. And yeah, Vacant Spirit. The guitar here was a bit more interesting, and the rhythm to the music was particularly interesting in the track as well. Not to say that previous tracks weren't, but in this one, yeah, in particular, it was just a bit more interesting.
I guess the other high points I'd pick out from the album, I liked at the beginning of No Brainer the synth sound. I thought that sound kind of worked with everything else going on quite well. I think, again, it was one moment where I think the production could have been improved a bit. There was just a bit too much reverb to give, so the guitars didn't really have enough space. But I liked that intro. And there are a few other moments I really liked. The duo of Cherry Seed and Drainer being more 90s influence, so Cherry Seed with more of like 90s emo coming in. And I think the distorted guitar lead brought a bit more of a dynamic sound that I was looking for in that first half. And some cool vocal effects as well added to it. And then Drainer being a bit more grungy and 90s alt, with a again, slightly better production on the rhythm guitars, where they have a bit more presence to them and don't have that blending with the cymbals type sound that I think is there in a few other spots. Let's wrap up our review by ranking the album. Currently, the album ranking stand as at number 8, Sprints with Letter to Self, number 7, Glass Beach with Plastic Death, number 6, Office Dog with Spiel, number 5, Vacations with No Place Like Home, number 4, Omni's Souvenir, number 3, Phaser by Helado Negro, number 2, Loss of Life by MGMT, and at number 1, Katy Kirby with Blue Raspberry. Where do we want to put Third Wind by Golfer?
To say whilst we deliberate, I just wanted to thank you both for ranking Loss of Life at number 2, because that is where I'd have put it. So I was very pleased
it at number 1.
to see that ranking.
What were your general thoughts on it, Elle?
I really enjoyed it. I was almost nervous because I was like, I felt like I'd hyped it up in my own head before listening to it. And I was scared that I was then going to be disappointed just because I had hyped it up. But I was like, oh, actually, no, it is really strong. And it is just, it's everything that MGMT does so well, really encapsulated on that album. And I can see myself re-listening to it a lot throughout the year. And I think, James, was it you? You were saying that you were like, oh, I think we're going to either think we've overrated it or underrated it. I don't think so. I think number 2 at the moment feels strong in terms of, you know, ratio to the number of albums we've listened to. It feels like it's going to be top percentile album. This is when it comes to December and I'm like drastically wrong. But right now, I think it's going to hold up.
Right then, back to this album. Where are we going to put Third Wind? I think maybe my memory of Glass Beach is not strong enough, because I kind of tried to, I did listen to it the week that the review happened, and I was just not in the headspace to have that kind of experience. But I think my lasting memory of it's just generally quite stressful. So I'd maybe put this at number 7, just below Office Dog. I think generally, I mean, there's lots of good in this, right? I think there are still moments where their guitar work is great. I think, I mean, the thing I partly love about Golfer, their songwriting is generally like really strong and kind of relatable in interesting ways. But they take the really technical, like showy guitar, which normally absolutely turns me off. Like, what's the band that everyone's into on YouTube? Polyphia? Is that the one?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I cannot stand that kind of stuff where it's just like guitar theatrics for the sake of doing them. I think Golfer do it in an interesting way where it's always led by the song and it always serves the song. And I think there are moments where they pull that out here and it really works. It's just, as a longer term fan of the band, I just feel like this isn't really the direction I wanted for it, and that's maybe not fair, but I'd argue that I'm not criticizing the choice of where they wanted to go. I just feel like it wasn't executed in a way that really works for it.
Yeah, I'm actually leaning on number 9 after Sprints, because I'm just remembering Sprints, and I think I preferred it to everyone else when on that week we had that. I probably need to revisit it, to be honest. But yeah, saying that, like, this album was still good. Like you mentioned, Will, like, you could notice the guitar was good, you could notice the drums were good, but they never like outshone the song itself. They fit into the song well. They helped enhance the whole song rather than taking the forefront and like dumbing it down. Yeah, for me, it would be either 8 or 9.
I think I've been more positive about this album overall than the two of you. But that being said, I think when it comes to the ranking, I wouldn't necessarily rank it super highly. Just I think in comparison to the other albums we have listened to so far this year, particularly in terms of kind of what I think I'm going to revisit, I don't think this will necessarily be really high on that list. I think, like you, Will, my memory of Glass Beach, Plastic Death, is Stress, which I feel like does a disservice to the album, but it did just inspire Stress in me, and I've not re-listened to it since because of that, and I feel like I should go back and re-listen. But I think because of that, I would rank this one above that. I don't know if I'd put it above Office Dog. I think I'd probably sit at number 7 like you, Will.
Well, that means that Third Wind by Gulf is going in at number 7. Can I just say now, can everyone go and download Dog Bless by Gulf, their second album, on their phones, so that we've got that ready to listen to? Because trust me, it is amazing.
Maybe I need to buy it on CD.
Definitely worth. Yeah, buy on. Well, I don't know, because they're a Canadian band and it was released by an American label, so I don't know how easy CDs are going to be to come by in the UK, but if you can, definitely. Right, that's it for the review, so let's get on to upcoming releases. What's coming out this week that you need to know about? First off, Fortet's releasing a new album. It's called 3. He's released some singles from it. They sound interesting. It's another Fortet album, so I'll definitely listen, because he's great. Next up, indie/emo band Sweet Pill are releasing a new EP. It's called Starchild. Indie rock band Horse Beach are releasing an album called Things to Keep Alive. Next up, the most L-named album of the year so far, 10 Songs I Hate About You by Dancer is coming out this week. So that's one to keep an eye on. And finally, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, which is going to be tricky. Dan Boeckner is releasing, I think it's his debut solo album. It's called Boeckner with an exclamation mark. He was the frontman, or is the frontman. I don't know if they're technically still a band, but he's the frontman of Wolf Parade, who are a great indie band, and released some fantastic albums through the 2000s and 2010s. So I'd be interested to hear what he's doing by himself. That's it for upcoming releases, and that's it for the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you, James and Elle, for joining me.
You?
Yes?
If you like the show, new episodes come out every Monday, but if you're likely to forget, you can subscribe on your podcast service of choice and consider turning on notifications. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email at unmutedunmastered@gmail.com. I can now announce that the album for next week is Playing Favourites by Sheer Mag.